Well, we're in the middle of another heat wave, the second of the summer, but this one is a whopper. It's been going on for 2 weeks now, more or less, and there's no end in sight. Many parts of Europe are also suffering from the oppressive temperatures, and I guess you could say that in Spain, we're equipped to handle it, or at least should be, but even so, I have to admit that this is one of the tougher ones we've been through in the past few years. To give you an idea, just the other day, daytime highs dipped to about 36 degrees, that's 95 Fahrenheit, and we were all raving about what a nice day it was. So it's been pretty hot here. In a previous podcast, I talked about some of the ways in which the Spanish keep cool by drinking one of the many refreshing beverages available in this country. A number of them are especially typical in Spain, like the granizado de limón, the horchata, and even barley water, in addition to your ice cold beer or the tinto de verano, which is obviously for adults. But there are other options out there which serve as a meal and sometimes even a drink. A dish which has gone down in history as one of Spain's most international, and we are talking about that cold or chilled tomato-based soup known as gazpacho, or gazpacho as they would say here. Now, not everyone is keen on cold soups, but once you spend a summer in sunny and often very hot Spain, you will see the immediate advantages to filling your body with nutrients without making your body feel all filled up. And gazpacho does that incredibly well. Now, you know I like to talk about history and the history of things related to Spain, but before I get to that, let me just give you a quick rundown on what goes into gazpacho. Basically, it's mostly tomatoes. Usually, we would say it's a kilo of tomatoes, and then you would add a green pepper and a cucumber, a slice or a couple of slices of stale bread, garlic, olive oil, vinegar, and salt. And then you blend it all together. And that's pretty much it. Some people do without the bread, others get rid of the cucumber, citing that it ruins the flavor. In fact, mild versions of gazpacho avoid the often mistreated cucumber altogether. Anyway, once everything is mixed together, you let it chill in the fridge for at least 2 hours. You could serve it in a bowl or a cup. Some people basically drink it directly. That's one thing I like to do. And others add chopped up pieces or diced cucumber, tomato, or onion, and they sort of toss it into the soup and then eat it like a traditional soup with a spoon. When it's really hot out there, it's so refreshing, it's hard not to ask for seconds. So that's the soup that we're talking about. Now, just what is the history of this international dish? Well, it's a good question because it's pretty long and twisted and surprisingly vague. Partly because there isn't much written about it, and partly because just exactly what gazpacho is has been pretty tough to define over the centuries. As we said, its origins go back a long time, but the modern version has been around for less time than many might realize. There are some pretty logical reasons for that. The tomato, for example, the base ingredient obviously was not going to appear any time before 1492 and probably much later, but we'll get to that in a second. Now, gazpacho does get started, or probably got started, at the time much of Spanish history itself got started, with the Romans, though some say it may have been even earlier than that. And this version has little to do with the version that we know today, but we're going to see how that basic recipe slowly developed into the one that is so popular nowadays. The dish that we're talking about, and the one that the Romans sort of concocted, was sort of a mushy mix of bread, garlic, vinegar, olive oil, and some cold water, sometimes cold water. Now, this sounds like the kind of meal you'd never order on a date, or only eat if you were starving. You probably wouldn't be far off. But if we are to draw any conclusions, it would be that a combination of those ingredients pretty much spelled one thing: poverty and a poor existence. Why else would you mash together those things and eat them if they weren't the only things you could eat? Its purpose was sort of a way of subsisting, a little more. It certainly wasn't fancy. Some people also believe that this may have been part of a soldier's diet. In other words, stale, hard bread that could be softened when put in contact with a liquid, especially water. And this has been done over the ages. In fact, in the American Civil War, in the 1860s, soldiers were provided with the, I was going to say famous, but rather infamous hardtack, which was a rock-like biscuit, which could last for a long, long time and would be turned into sort of a basic meal by blending it with water. So that sort of makes sense. And the other ingredients were things that pretty much anyone could get their hands on. And aside from the garlic, which hardly constitutes a vegetable, produce is notably absent from this recipe. And it's most likely that this same dish, as well as other versions of it, probably carried on unaltered for centuries. They may have added a few things here and there, depending on what they had available, but that was the basic idea. Mention of gazpacho, or gazpacho, even caspacho, some people spelled it that way, with a C, was made as early as the 12th century. In fact, back then, the word gazpacho really wasn't the name of the dish at all, but it actually referred to the bread pieces used, or at least that's one theory. The name possibly came from the word caspachos, in plural, and the origin of that word might be caspa, an old word for flakes or crumbs or pieces. Today, caspa also means dandruff. It's not 100% sure, at least that theory, but it's a pretty funny association if it's true. But the fact is, no one really knows what the origin of the word is. Anyway, gazpacho came in all sorts of forms and temperatures, hot and cold. And some people believe it started in the middle of the country, more in La Mancha, not down south, where most people associate it with. The discovery of America was a game changer for gazpacho, in that it was after this initial contact with the New World that a huge contribution to the European diet took place. In the days when no one worried about the potential effects of bringing in new species to another climate, or much less the diseases that might accompany those that arrival, foods like potatoes, peppers, and of course tomatoes eventually found acceptance. These would eventually play a very important role in the development of the modern gazpacho, the one that we know today. But not yet. We're not quite there yet. In the meantime, the dish continued to have an ambiguous history and existence, but it did exist. Depending on the place and the time of year, it seemed just about anything could be known as gazpacho. In Don Quixote, Cervantes' famous novel, the writer describes what today is known as gazpacho manchego, or at least that's what some people believe. As I said, it's mentioned in the book, but there's no description, so it's sort of hard to say which one Cervantes was talking about. But if it was the manchego version, and that would have been logical, we are talking about a hot dish where unleavened bread was used for tossing into sort of a hot stew made of small game, like rabbits and partridges and things like that, possibly even some chicken. It's sort of like the way we add crackers to clam chowder, to give you an idea of what we're talking about. It certainly wasn't light, and it still isn't. You can still find it. It's called gazpacho manchego. So beware of ordering that in the middle of summer if you ever see it. Further south in Andalusia, a colder version evolved and appeared. It doesn't mean they didn't have hot kinds of gazpacho. It's just that in the summertime, the climate beckons for something else. We can find certain references to it and some basic recipes, or at least descriptions. If you look at the 1724 Spanish dictionary, it calls it an Andalusian soup, so that's important to know. By then it was referred to as an Andalusian soup, made of small pieces of bread, olive oil, vinegar, garlic, and other ingredients. The definition adds that it was typically eaten by harvesters and other country folk. Notice that there is no mention of tomato, green peppers, or cucumbers. There were different versions back then, and in fact some still exist today, like the famous ajo blanco, which is called white garlic soup, and that's a combination of bread, garlic, and almonds, vinegar, and obviously cold water to give it a soupy texture. I've made it from scratch. It is painstaking, especially shelling the almonds, to say the least. I'd probably call it more of a pain in the butt, but it's also delicious. Now, to almost everyone's surprise, the first recorded recipe of gazpacho did not appear in a manuscript in some kitchen in Seville, but instead in a publication printed in a very distant and unsuspecting location, Virginia, in the United States. The author was a woman named Mary Randolph. Certainly doesn't sound very Spanish. And she had released what some considered to be the first cookbook ever. And if it wasn't the first, it certainly was one of the first and a major reference book for cooks in the United States throughout the 19th century. The book was called The Virginia Housewife. It was published in 1824. And there you have it. This is no exaggeration. This is entirely true. That's where you can find a recipe for gazpacho. She actually calls it gazpacha with an A at the end. Most of the recipes are for regional dishes from America. So how the heck did gazpacho get there in the first place? The answer is simple. Her sister was living in Spain at the time and would occasionally write back and mention a number of recipes, dishes that she really liked. And one of them was gazpacho. And this is what she had to say about it and how she described it. This, we're talking about Mary Randolph here. She says, put some soft biscuit or toasted bread in the bottom of a salad bowl. Put in a layer of sliced tomatoes with the skin taken off. That's actually something people do today. Then you add a sliced cucumber, sprinkle with pepper, salt, and chopped onion. The onion normally doesn't go in the modern gazpacho, and we're also missing a green pepper. But still, the ingredients are getting closer to what we're familiar with today. You do this until the bowl is full, and then you stew some tomatoes until they're quite soft, strain the juice, mix in some mustard and oil, and pour over it. And then mix it all together. Make it 2 hours before it's supposed to be eaten. Now, except for the mustard, a lot of the elements we find in gazpacho today are present, but we'll notice that the soup isn't blended. It's sort of rather chunky, and you can still find that in some traditional versions. For example, I think Portuguese gazpacho is more like that. It's what they sometimes call a gazpacho majado. Now, as I said before, I mentioned one thing that stood out was the use of tomatoes. And I say that because quite possibly the last member to join the gazpacho team was in fact the very ingredient most people think of when ordering it, tomatoes. Up until the 19th century, it appears to have been rarely included, and it probably didn't get as much attention as it could have until it became popular with the middle and upper classes who were searching for a nice chilled meal for the heated summers, and they wanted some vegetable that would be more palatable to their refined tastes. As electric appliances became more popular in Spanish homes, so did this soup become less chunky and more creamy. The bits of green peppers or cucumber, tomatoes and onions, even breadcrumbs that could be added to the soup on top of it when you're serving it, is almost like a tribute to the original idea of the dish. Even the name gazpacho andaluz, or Andalusian gazpacho, appears to have been a recent incorporation, perhaps no older than the 1960s. So we're basically talking about a world-famous dish that has gone through a lot of enormous changes over the centuries to become what it is today. Now, recently, gazpacho has had to share some of the limelight with its cousin, a soup called salmorejo. I'll spell that one for you. It's S-A-L-M-O-R-E-J-O. This is traditionally a dish from Cordoba, and for many years it played second fiddle to gazpacho. But I would say in the last 10 years or so, it has soared in popularity all over the country, and especially in Madrid, I can vouch for that, where you can find it in many restaurants. I'm not going to say most, but possibly the majority, especially in summertime. In fact, I'd even say, or go as far as to say, that it has become more popular and more visible than gazpacho. It's similar to gazpacho in that it's served cold, and it has a tomato base, and it's very creamy. The biggest difference is that it also includes a lot more bread, and so that makes it sort of thicker. And then instead of sprinkling in bits of vegetables, if you want, you sprinkle in bits of Spanish ham and hard-boiled egg and a bit of olive oil. The texture, as I said, is thicker and meatier, and it's practically a meal in itself. Careful about all that bread, as I mentioned before. It may cause you the bloat, and you may think, oh, this is a nice light meal, but it can get pretty heavy in the end if you're not careful. It's delicious and also one of my favorite dishes, but if you are looking for something lighter and more refreshing, especially when these heat waves start to really beat down, I tend to go with just your standard gazpacho. And gazpacho itself continues to evolve. More and more people exclude the bread from it and add other ingredients like strawberries, apple, melon, or even beets. And the results are terrific. So there you have it. A little bit about gazpacho, a little bit about its history. Go out there and get yourself some. Yeah, you won't regret it. And that'll be all for today. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us with any comments you might have. We love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, please click on our PayPal donate button. Or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, stay cool, and hasta pronto.